there's a good reason why people can be guarded, because sharing challenges in the wrong context, the wrong way, to the wrong person, without the right sort of setup, can backfire.
You're listening to the Building Better Futures podcast, where innovation meets inspiration. In each episode, host Eric Hirani journeys alongside notable thought leaders who are shaping the future, cultivating exceptional work cultures, and nurturing the next generation of trailblazers. We aim to spark inspiration by engaging in dialogue with leaders from groundbreaking companies, innovative projects, and exceptional teams. Our goal is to empower individuals to positively impact those around them and leave a lasting legacy of positive change in our communities and society at large. Let's dive in together and explore what it takes to build better futures, one conversation at a time.
Welcome to today's episode. This is a first in our show's history, and I'm so excited. Many of our listeners know I'm an avid consumer of leadership and business books, and I just love that stuff. And today I'm so honored and excited to be joined by our first ever author guest, but also business founder, Ahad Gadimi, who's CEO and founder of Forums at Work and author of The Turnaround Artists, and also is a YPOer. He and I share that in common, and we've had some great conversations around that. So I am excited to dive into our conversation today. But before we do that, I always like to take a minute to talk about some good news and gratitude. So I'll ask you, is there any personal or professional good news or gratitude you'd like to share with me in the audience today?
First of all, great to be here. I've been so looking forward to a conversation today, and I've so enjoyed our conversations leading up to this. Something I'm really grateful and I'd say really proud of is there was a moment actually yesterday with my colleagues where I just took a step back and I just seen how much they've grown and how much they've evolved in a relatively short time, and just their confidence and their leadership and their ownership. It was just a really proud moment for me to see like how far they've come and how they've really sort of felt about themselves. And yeah, that's really sort of stayed with me. That just happened yesterday. So
I love that. And especially on the show and to my team directly, I talked to them so much about like not only how much they've grown, and maybe this was true for you too, but how much like you've probably grown as a leader then in that time, because I know I feel that all the time. I'm like, I am a different person than I was 3, 4, 5, 10 years ago, you know, and it's so exciting. I'm glad you mentioned that. And I do good news and gratitudes on our daily huddles. And tomorrow I'm going to share that with our team too, because that is true for me too. I've seen them grow in tremendous ways. And, you know, from being individual contributors to like true team managers, you know, like managing to the point where now they have to create their own management structure because they've got so many people on their teams. They're like, hey, I can't have 20 direct reports. You know, I can't have 10 direct reports. I need to have 4 or 5 or 6 and get everyone else in a situation where they can be leaders to the rest of their team. So I'm so glad that you share that. That's awesome.
It's funny, actually. So I have a wonderful colleague in Nairobi, Diana, and she just celebrated 1 year with us. And I literally said that same thing to her this morning, just a few hours ago. I said, you've excelled so much as an individual contributor, and that's really step one. And now I just really see you evolving into a terrific manager. And that's funny. I'm looking forward to sharing that with her.
You know, it's great that like that whole leadership journey and path, and this is one of the things that's like great about YPO, right? It's like, you have those conversations and you realize how similar the path is, right? Almost like irrespective of business or company or generations, right? Like family owned, individually owned, VC backed, private equity backed, whatever you got. But it's all about that journey and like making everyone a better version of themselves so they can empower their next, you know, people behind them and just like keep growing in that way. It's really cool. And we onboarded a new person earlier today, and I did a, you know, just like a one-on-one with them to welcome them to the team. They're not my direct report, but they're going to be part of the company, and I like to say hello. And I shared that exact sentiment with them, how like so much of what we do, both as a business, but even me individually, is like, how do we empower people around us to be better community members, whatever that means, right? Because typically better leaders, better community members. So I'm sure we could talk about this for an hour. I will just share my gratitude, and on show days, my gratitude is almost always to the guests. Thank you for taking the time out to do this. you know, it's, I told you this story yesterday when we were doing some conversation, and I was, you know, I had your book on my library and my wife and I were talking about it. I was like, you know, the author of that book is going to be on my show. And it was like such a cool thing for me because I really love this story and the power of truth, right? Like that's really what it was. Like that was a real experience. It's just amazing. All right, great. Well, with that, I want to give you an opportunity to maybe tell us a little bit about the Turnaround Artist and Forms at Work. And then more specifically, tell us a little bit about yourself. Like, where did you grow up? Where'd you go to school? How did you get into this, you know, part of your life, I guess? So go ahead, tell us about yourself.
Wonderful. Okay. So I was born in Tehran, mid-80s. My parents were very young. I'm the first in the family. It was right around the time when it was sort of after the revolution, during pretty catastrophic war. And long story short, my parents left, essentially fled Iran as refugees and found themselves in Canada. They were in their early 20s. And really, it was a story of just having to start from scratch, just the three of us. And so my father, he actually comes from a line of entrepreneurs, always in the hospitality business, specifically restaurants and bakeries. So I don't know if it's fate or just muscle memory, but he ended up as a baker in a muffins shop. And so he was a baker at the shop. And long story short, he eventually bought the shop. And he actually bought it from a YPR, who I'll actually sort of circle back to a little later. So he bought the shop, bought another shop, and just eventually sort of built his little empire of cafes and bakeries, restaurants. And so that was sort of our journey. And we started off in Flemington Park, which is, if anybody knows Toronto, is, I guess, arguably like the worst neighborhood in the city. And eventually just kept, time we kept doing better, so we just kept moving. And so I changed schools a lot and changed neighborhoods a lot and got a real sort of a 360 of a lot of sort of the different neighborhoods and areas in Toronto, and went through the French education system, eventually went to the University of Western Ontario, did a major in industrial psychology, very sort of passionate about humanities and the liberal arts, and then went to the Richard Ivey School of Business, which is a case study school for, you know, very similar to Harvard, where you sort of do three cases a day. And so I feel really grateful to have had this quite a diverse upbringing and a culturally diverse upbringing. And so growing up, you know, first born, I spent a lot of my summers after school in the family business. And parents were super hardworking. Grinding is probably the more apt description. And so I got to see, I got an education and the power of small business and how you could sort of start from Flemington Park and sort of end up in a completely different sort of part of town and how powerful that is. And I also got to see the impact on the family, you know, when you have to sort of with the grind and how difficult it is and parents coming home late and parents coming home stressed and the impact that has, you know, sort of on you growing up. And I love what you said something earlier about Turnaround Artists and truth, because actually when I wrote Turnaround Artists, there was a moment when I was writing it where I thought, really, my goal here is to tell the truth. And the truth doesn't mean not saying a lie. It just means there's like layers of truth. And that's what vulnerability is. It's just like peeling back the layers, maybe layers you don't even know about. And so one element of that truth is I wanted nothing to do with the family business. Nothing. I decided, I think I'm 14, 15 years old, that I was, you know, my siblings could have it. I want to be as far away from it as possible. And so my career evolved, and somewhere sort of in my early 30s, my father had an accident, and it was pretty bad. My mom was really scared, and she asked me to come home and help take over the business. Frankly, it was the last thing I wanted to do. Just like it's from like even the scar tissue of growing up around that, and sort of the challenges and stress that I endured. And also, my father and I had very sort of different perspectives on leadership and culture, and so it was interesting. This experience really caused me to put what I considered ideals, my childhood ideals of business and management leadership, to play. And in a place where I really had a lot of sort of strong opinions of how it should be, but it's like, okay, well, here you go. Here's your hand at it. So that was a really humbling and interesting experience. That's what Turnaround Artists is really about. It's really about the son sort of begrudgingly having to come home, take over, face the father. We kind of helped him. My father was sidelined at home, so I should sort of do what I wanted, you know, at the businesses. Helps from a change management, a turnaround standpoint. But yeah, just sort of that the challenges of the relationship and the challenge of turning around a company culture that's been sort of on a certain path for 40 years at this point. And so also turnarounders is sort of meant to be a guide for people to how to recreate that process. How do you drive culture change? Just this word culture can be so nebulous, so like vague. What is a culture? What does it look like? How do you define it? Can you change it? And just given sort of the experiences that I had, I want to sort of offer a path and a bird's eye view through a story of how people can replicate culture change in their respective.
I love that part of the book. The setup is like, I guess it's like a parable, right? It's a story and you're following along in this journey that's like real. And there was something you said in the middle there about like when your parents came home and you could feel that stress, right? And kids do feel it, right? Like I didn't realize this, but I have a very similar background to you, right? My dad's an entrepreneur, comes from a family of entrepreneurs. You know, they immigrated here. And so I was like I'm the oldest firstborn, saw kind of the hard work and grind, right? That's all I know. And I'm like that too, for I guess that reason. But the point I wanted to make about that I think is interesting is like that stress can exist, but if you're able to create the positive culture and work environment, those parents go home to their kids and are energized. And then that was like that community and ripple effect I was talking about, and you touched on it. And I love that idea is like, and so I'll pivot back to when I was doing the onboarding call with their new team member earlier today. And I said that to her, and like, you almost always have to figure out, like, I have to like justify the business, but like the business to me is the vehicle to empower those people, right? I don't have that vehicle without it. And yes, it affords me tons of opportunity, right? We're not being naive here. Like, yes, I'm very grateful for all that I get to do, but I really like that part of having a platform that I can empower others. And then hopefully it reflects in the community that they then go out and serve, right? Themselves, being their family and their neighborhoods and all that. So
I just have to interject. I really didn't know you felt this way. And it's almost eerie because I didn't want to interrupt, but you're sort of vocalizing things that I feel very, very strongly about. Like parents going home energized. Like that is like my one fundamental purpose because of the experience that I had growing up. So just hearing you say that, it gave me goosebumps because that is, and then the second thing you said was just the vehicle to empower people and using that not in a naive way, in a very practical way, in a very sustainable way, but that's not mutually exclusive to run a great business and to offer a venue and a platform for people to have this sort of rippling effect in society. So super inspired to hear you say that.
That's really cool. No, I love it. And that's why I knew this was going to be a great conversation. I'm gonna not pivot away, but talking about like forms at work, I've got like the first question, because a lot of our listeners probably don't know, but like, maybe like, what is a forum? What makes it effective? And then how did you kind of come on this idea that it would be an effective thing to do at work, right? Because forums for us are very parallel, right? We're you know, all business owners in our forums, or in EO, I don't know the exact setup, but at least in YPO, that's a setup. That we're all members, right? That are in the forum, not business owners, but members.
So a forum is named for ultimately a peer group, a group of peers that get together and have conversations. What are those conversations about? You have a wide range of peer groups, and there is a great academic professor from George Washington University who's like the foremost scholar on this. I really encourage you to read his work, Roman Terrakin. And so what Roman sort of lays out is that there's so many different types of peer groups. Forums in YPO is one of them, and it's basically people of a shared interests, shared challenges, shared goals coming together to have discussions. And those discussions can range from just professional, they can range from professional personal. And in the case of a YPO forum, YPO being the Young President's Organization, a members organization for CEOs who join under the age of 45, who have a certain level of revenue and employees, to join and have very sort of holistic conversations about their business, personal, and family lives. And sort of the deeper and the more authentic, the better. I was not ever really aware of peer groups or peer support groups. You've got in a lot of different sort of capacities, like Alcoholics Anonymous, for example. That's a peer support group. They get together because they're working through addiction. And then you've got sort of these business ones where you sort of have your sort of personal board of advisors. And so it's funny, I was telling you the story about my growing up years, and the gentleman, Michael Bregman, who sold a lot of these sort of restaurants, cafes to my father. He's like a prolific YPOer, they're a legend actually in Canada. He was a mentor growing up. And I think when I was 17, I used to go and see him and have coffee. And he told me about YPO, and I didn't know what it was, but I'm like, okay, I'm going to join one day. That was so I sort of put that away. And one day, my early 30s, I kind of realized I qualified and kind of a full circle moment because I had him sort of write me a recommendation letter. But when I was joining YPO, the first thing they said to me that the you have sort of a membership interview, and he said, you know, it's all about being vulnerable. I mean, I couldn't spell the word at the time. I didn't know what it meant. And very similar to you, Eric, I grew up with very hardworking, committed parents that just sort of got on with it. You know, it was actually never really modeled this idea. Does vulnerability mean you complain? I mean, what does that even mean? What does it look like? So vulnerability, sure. If I could join YPO, I'll join. Vulnerability is, you know, whatever that word means. And I remember joining my first forum and they're explaining, I went through the training and I'm like, okay, well, you got to sort of talk about your challenges, talk about insecurities. I did not have that muscle. I did not have that model. I just didn't know how to do that. And quite frankly, being the youngest person in my chapter and being in a forum with people doing like some really incredible things, you know, blasting satellites into space and running very well-known global brands, like imposter syndrome was right there with me, you know? And so the last thing, and I didn't know how this thing works. I'm like, okay, well, next thing they're going to think is this person, I'm going to share about my challenges, and they're going to say, you know, this guy does not belong here, kick him out, you know, like he slipped through the cracks. So that was a really challenging and awkward moment for me that night in this sort of big office tower in downtown Denver. And I don't know, I took the plunge and I shared. And it was just really interesting in that moment. Sort of some of my colleagues, I'll never forget, they're like, oh yeah. I've been through that, you know, one person's like, I'm going through that right now. Yeah, so the challenge, I was like, really? You're going through that? You know, and somewhere in my mind, I thought, oh no, you sort of get past these things. And it's kind of like you were saying earlier, there's like this universal journey, this universal concept that no matter what industry you are, what stage of your career, business you are, but you'd never know until you opened up and shared it. You keep it inside. If everybody keeps it under wraps, and you can never know. And that's the power of these forums, is you create a safe space. You follow a very specific structure that allows for you to confidently and without recourse share and talk about it, and only for you to realize, wow, we're all very much dealing with the same thing. And so the first thing that does is it gives you this kind of cathartic feeling, like, it's not just me. And this voice in my head that's like really beating me up, and especially if you're a very driven, type A entrepreneurial person, that voice is, you know, it could be a great motivator, but it could also really be difficult. It really sort of beats you up all the time, and you realize, oh, I am actually doing quite well, and this is actually very common, and this is really par for the course, and you can kind of voice and quiet down a little bit. So that was my first experience with the forum, and just this big aha moment for me was a few things. One, this is what CEOs do. Like, I just sort of thought there was some Herculean effort where you just sort of lone ranger, get it done and make it happen. And like, oh, they get together and they have these sort of feelings, conversations about their feelings, you know, and their emotions. Like, who knew, you know? And the other thing I thought was, how come we all know about this? How come nobody knows about this? And how come it's just CEOs? Because I guess others could probably benefit from this as well.
That, and I, you know, use the word vulnerable, and like, that is not my strength. I know that. And like, I'm really working on it. And it's amazing how, as a team, like, I'm going to keep referencing this onboarding call today, but I guess, so I was speaking with her, and I just told her, like, I was telling her about some of this stuff in the Valley, and like, kind of the culture we're trying to create here, right? And it's that if they trust each other and they're vulnerable with each other, they're going to elevate each other, you know? Whereas if you're closed off and trying to, if you're so afraid of the repercussions of something you've done that you can't even share it with someone, then there's no way for you to like improve or get any feedback on it. So the vulnerability is huge. And I do love the idea. And while we don't do anything formal here, like forums at work, although maybe not yet, but there, we definitely try to bring that vulnerability to work. And like, I would just for listeners who maybe not all are either CEOs or entrepreneurs, but are mostly like either part of a team or managing a team, like trying to be vulnerable and get your team to have some vulnerability and build some trust is like a really powerful way to get more out of everybody. And raise the energy. You know, sometimes you're so shielded and guarded that everything feels negative. And it doesn't need to be. Even problems are really like, you know, they're opportunities. They're just disguised opportunities.
Absolutely. And look, there's a good reason why people can be guarded, because sharing challenges in the wrong context, the wrong way, to the wrong person, without the right sort of setup, can backfire. And that's why we do it. We're very protective, because we don't want that recourse. I mean, to feel psychologically safe means to feel like you can share something and there won't be any negative impact on your reputation, on your job, and your career. And I think that's what forums and peer groups allow for. I think it's a right setup to allow people to learn how to do that, and to do that in the right way, so that trust builds and that confidence builds to share more and more. And like you said, you know, when we have these sort of challenges or negative thoughts or fears or worries in our mind and we don't express it, it really amplifies, it kind of bounces around in there in your head, and it's just so much worse. I mean, it's what therapy is about. You know, if you're able to sort of say it out loud, it sounds completely different, and you can actually get help, and it even changes your perspective. So there's always, we all know that that's what catharsis is. It's this feeling of relief when you share something out loud. But how do we set up the right context so that we can do that in a very productive way? People, A, feel comfortable doing it, and then when they do it, it leads to a compounding of more trust and more connection and more support, and not the opposite, because both are possible.
This episode is brought to you by Infinite Consulting Corp, your go-to firm for MBE certified project and construction management consulting. Discover how Infinite can help you build a better future at infiniteconsultingcorp.com.
Can you share, like, you know, so we just went through what forum is in a overview level type way, but can you share like a story where maybe you've seen how a forum like transformed an individual or an employee just from being in part of a forums at work type of program?
Yeah. So when I joined YPO, I was leading a collection of companies. I was doing turnarounds, and I was doing actually family business succession. So taking over businesses from retiring business owners. And I was very sort of opportunistic in that I ended up in industries I knew nothing about. You know, one of them was an industrial, they're producing industrial water filters made out of fiberglass reinforced plastics. And this was in Spartanburg, South Carolina, big industrial hub in the South. And even I think one of the top 10 sort of murder capitals in the United States. So a pretty rough, challenging place. And this facility that I took over, which was insolvent at the time, I'd been losing millions of dollars. It was just like on its last leg. I got this opportunity really because they had just given up on it at this point. And most of the employees were actually ex-cons right out of the South Carolina penal system, because A, they had a hard time getting hired, given their past, and B, we had a hard time hiring people because a fiberglass manufacturing facility with all the resin, that's a very difficult place to work, very toxic, like from like a chemical standpoint. And so I didn't know anything about this business, this industry. And so my goal was to really, A, get these few hundreds of people to really work together and care about what we were producing. Because we were producing big industrial water filters that go to this Arctic Circle, like all around the world. And if there's even a pinhole leak in these, you have to send someone out there to fix it. And so the whole idea was like taking, you know, a couple hundred people, putting them in these small groups and helping them sort of build relationships, trust, open communication with one another, and using this time so they would meet regularly once a week, and using that as a venue for them not only to build relationships, but to learn and grow and build leadership skills, communication skills that are just going to make them more effective team members and more engaged team members. And what I really got to see in that experience is people who really, I mean, didn't really care. I mean, you know, and I didn't really, it was just a job for them. And to people who just came to work with just tremendous passion, in gratitude. That was a really interesting thing of how grateful people started becoming for one another, for the company, how there were just fewer and fewer conflicts amongst people until there was none, because there was something very sort of manual about building these tanks. So people had to really collaborate, communicate well together. And when I first took over, there was a lot of friction. There was a lot of challenges. There was a lot of people walking off the plant floor. And it was interesting to see how through this process, people just started communicating with one another differently, taking more initiative, taking more leadership. And just something as just simple as people just being happier, you know, on the plant floor. And I have so many examples, but I think the thing that always just stays with me, and you mentioned it earlier, with people sharing how, I mean, the impact of the workplace was obvious. I mean, you could just see, you know, the throughput, the lack of wastage, how much faster we produce things. When I took over, we were 180 days late on average for all of our projects, how that came down to zero, and we started getting even ahead of the curb on deliveries. But it's when people started talking about how their family lives had changed and how their relationship with their wives had changed and their children. I mean, that just sort of blew me away. And that's when I sort of knew that this was really my purpose, was to take what we had created there and make it available to the maximum number of people.
And that's like, you know, I'm going to say something that's not me, but I think a lot of people will think this way, because I did, right? Before I really understood the power of forum and teams and peer groups. It's like, yeah, that sounds all well and good, but like, is it really possible? You know, is kind of the question in people's minds. And like, what resistance do you face when trying to do that, right? You have 100 and something ex-cons. Is that really a group of people that you can get into a forum and get vulnerable and start like, you know, hoping that they'll expose themselves? And obviously, yes is the answer. But like, tell us about the resistance you faced at that time. And like, how did you overcome that? Because I think, look, forget ex-cons, even the regular everyday, you know, employee probably is like, I'm not going to talk to you about my problems. Like, I'm here to work and for a paycheck and I'm going home, you know, like kind of situation.
Yeah. So there's two things I'll say. One, at this point, we have users in over 41 countries. We've kind of lost track, but it's like we've rolled this out in every region around the world, from California to Nicaragua to very popular in West Africa to Japan to the Middle East. And it is very, very common. People will always say, yeah, but have you done it in Vietnam? Yeah, but have you done it in the construction industry or the venture capital industry? Or, you know, we just rolled out the biggest law firm in the UK. And so in the oldest. I've just come to accept the fear, the resistance, the skepticism. And it's interesting, actually. I've actually come to enjoy it, because on the flip side of skepticism is surprise. The more skeptical someone is, the more surprised they are. And look, I'll be honest, when I launched this thing, my goal and my vision wasn't necessarily, I wasn't thinking about West Africa. I wasn't thinking about Japan. I was very, very sort of US-centric. It's where I lived and it's where we started. And I didn't know how this was going to sort of work in Lagos, Nigeria. You know, I didn't know where Lagos, Nigeria was at the time. So with every successive iteration and sort of rollout, I just really did realize how universal it is for people to feel comfortable to share their challenges, to be heard, to be respected, and that these are fundamental human traits, and that we do very little to know, there's very little to no sort of venue or process or structure to actually do that. And so people are so incredibly unfamiliar with it. And that's where a lot of this sort of skepticism comes from, is because a lot of people just haven't experienced it. A lot of people have not experienced the ability to really share, be open, share challenges, especially in what is arguably the most stressful part of our lives, workplace. Because it affects our livelihood. You know, if something goes wrong, you'd be fired. A lot of workplaces don't necessarily have great cultures, you know, often much worse. So I guess that's sort of the first part. And the second part is, what we've also learned is how to start in the shallow end of the pool and slowly, slowly walk towards the deep end. We don't dive into the deep end because you'll drown, you know? So we just sort of have to sort of take people very comfortably, step by step, because trust is a process. And how do you get people to little by little learn the tools, the techniques, and the process of building trust together so that you feel more comfortable to open up. And that is sort of an important part. I think that's when people start going through this process, they realize, oh, this is something I didn't know I needed, and now I can't imagine living without.
Very nice. I know it's a complex process, right? And I think believing and like taking that leap of faith is a big part of it. But for our listeners on the episode, right? And some may be in a position to affect change, some may not be, right? And you deal with people all across the organizational chart, right? Top to bottom. Like, what's one thing you think any listener to this episode could take away and be like, hey, this is an easy, like, just work on this or practice this. And I, you know, your teams will be better for it or you'll be better for it. Like,
you know, in fact, it's actually not complex. And maybe it's because just for like, you know, thousands of forums launched, so many different experiences. I think there's something, Mark Twain has this great quote, you know, sorry, I wrote you such a long letter. I didn't have time to write you a short one. So the more you get to know something, the more simple it becomes because it's actually quite simple. Really just comes down to creating a psychologically safe environment. How do you do that? It's just two simple elements. One, equality in conversational turn taking. So if you're having conversations with someone in a meeting, really being an adamant here, being adamant about each person having the same amount of time to talk, 1 minute each. Timing, you know, firms that work, we time everything. So it's very like a recipe, you know, it's measured. Everybody has the exact same amount of time to talk. The second thing is just ostentatious listening. I mean, that means like being so obviously paying attention. Your phone is upside down, it's off. You're not taking notes, you're making eye contact, you're really engaging. Those two things, just to start, practicing that, I can't overstate how powerful just that is because we don't do it. And when doing it, like listening, there's something I've called zone three listening. Zone one listening is, you know, you're asking me a question, I'm just in my head. And it's actually helpful in an interview because I'm thinking about what I'm going to say as you're asking questions. So that's good for zone one listening. But when you're in a meeting and discussing with someone, you probably want to be in zone two, but more importantly, zone three. Zone two is I'm hanging off every word. I'm listening to your words. I'm not in my head. I'm focused on, it's you and me, and we're in a tunnel. That's zone two. Zone three is I'm listening to the emotions of what you're saying. But yeah, I'm listening to sort of the, what you're not saying, you know, what's between lines. And so practicing just that create psychological safety because the person, we all know what it feels like when we're talking to someone and they're not paying attention or they're checked out, right? And that's common. So just doing the opposite is already very unique and rare. And so, but doing that and doing that regularly, and that's what essentially forms of work is just the cadence and the structure and the commitment to do that on a regular basis. But people, I mean, anybody could do this. It's very sort of available to us all.
I love that. And yesterday when you had mentioned about the equality of time, I was like, that was me consciously like, I wonder if we do a good job of that. And I sometimes think I take over meetings and I try not to, but even when I don't want to, I think I still do sometimes and it's hard for me. So that was something that you said to me yesterday. I made a note of it and I was like trying to figure out how am I going to be better about that? Because I want to hear everyone's voice. Everyone's got really good ideas. If I'm in a meeting or a conversation, it's typically with very bright people. Like I want to hear from them and I just want to make sure I'm giving them the opportunity to do that.
Look, you've achieved what you have because you're an entrepreneur. So that means you take initiative. That means you speak up and you're vocal. And so that's what's got you here. It's fantastic. I mean, you wouldn't have achieved what you have had you not had that ability and that capacity to do that. And yet to your point, now it's time to sort of do the opposite. So is that to speak last. And to ask questions and to let everybody else share and to be very, say maybe the least and give everybody that airtime. So it is sort of an important changing of gears for leaders as we're growing and scaling our businesses and making more sort of, putting more attention on building a culture.
Building the team. That was awesome. Because you mentioned that Mark Twain quote, and I'm a quote guy. So do you have like a favorite quote or a mantra you subscribe to?
I think a quote's come to mind, but I'll tell you something I've just been thinking about a lot, especially, again, as an entrepreneur. And look, we have a very simple goal, and our goal is to put 1 billion people in forums, and very specifically to put 1 million people in the next 36 months in forums. That's about 5% of the YPO market. our community. And we've taken very big strides in doing that. But sometimes you sort of look at this goal and you're like, you sort of look at the top of the mountain, you see how far there is to go. But I think what I've been thinking about a lot is actually, that's fine, you got to look at where you're going, but actually look back at how far you've come. And that's really something I've been thinking about a lot. And really giving oneself, we talked about empowering and encouraging our colleagues, but you know, what about us? You know, and encouraging ourselves and empowering ourselves, because the amount of energy, stubborn persistence and resilience that it takes for us to do what we do every day. So that's something a mantra I've been thinking about a lot is giving to myself. And Snoop Dogg has this great song. He says, you know, I want to thank me. And so doing that and really seeing how far I've come. It's right. I ask myself, have I made progress in the last day, in the last week, in the last month, in the last year? And those are resounding yeses. And when I realize that, it fuels me to take bigger leaps and bounds, you know, up that mountain.
It's funny because it's like we're on the same brain length here. We just did our quarterly meeting with the executive team, and we came up with their BHAG. And my first message to the team was like, but that is not what you can focus on, because that's going to seem impossible, right? Like, that's a BHAG for those that don't know, BHAG is a big, hairy, audacious goal. And it's supposed to feel almost impossible to attain. That's the point of it. And really what we have to figure out is, hey, what are the small steps that get us there, right? Let's do the one thing. And to your point, I'll probably mention this during our next quarterly retreat, like, look how far we've come from, right? And I was telling you earlier, a lot of my executive team were individual contributors, are now like true team managers. I mean, that's a big step for them. So, and that quote, I want to thank me. I'm going to make that the quote. All right, last question before we jump into the lightning round. And I think you just gave us the answer, actually. So the vision for the next decade, it's like 1 billion people in Forum. Is that kind of the idea?
Yeah, very, very simply. So look, we have a very clear path, very practical path to getting there. You know, if every YPO, EO member and Vistage and all these other sort of peer groups, CEOs who are in Forums, if they brought Forum peer groups into their organizations, into their people, that already gets us about 350 million people. And so the way we've built our platform is we actually don't have a paywall. So we will never turn someone away because of cost. So there is no paywall. I'm a dedicated meditator. I do Vipassana meditation, the 10-day silent meditation retreats. And in those meditations,
wow. Wait, what was it called again?
Vipassana.
My sister's friend just did it 10 days. He was like, no phone. He's been doing it every year I might connect you guys. I don't know how common it is, but
it's wonderful. It's really, I've done 15 of them. So one a year for the last 15 years, and I'll do one for the rest of my life. And one of the things that inspires me about it is there's no paywall. You pay what you want, what you can, if you want. And so it's as accessible as something can be. It's so accessible. And so cost is not an issue for anybody at that point. You know, we're about to put, I think it's something like 240 people who have just been laid off into sort of forums to support each other. So for us, you know, that's one. And then we've also sort of made it so simple and easy that anybody, anywhere in the world, any level can be part of one. So now it's just a matter of commitment, execution, bringing on the right people, and just every day waking up and doing the same thing. And so we feel like if we can tap into these networks of people who are leaders, decision makers, who are already doing this, and give them the opportunity to bring this to their team members, employees, that gets us about 350 million. But then we also have forums at home. And so that allows those people to bring this to their families and have forum-style conversations with their children and their spouses. And so that easily sort of gets it past the billion-person mark.
I think Forum is such a powerful tool, and it's all about how you implement it, really, right? Like, we've been in bad forms, we've been in good forms, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
And it's all about the people. But it comes down to the three things you said earlier. And so I just want to, like, for the listeners, just the, like, being vulnerable. And it is so hard, and it's really a learned skill, and it takes practice, you know, just like anything else that you want to get good at, it takes practice. The being conscious and equal time sharing for talking, right? Like, there are people on your teams, there are people you talk to, there are people in your families that are just quieter by nature. Doesn't mean they don't have something to share or don't need to talk, but like they, you know, maybe be more conscious about giving them their gifting now that opportunity and the act of listening. And I love that. Before I let you go, I do want to go through my lightning round questions, if that's cool.
Yeah, sure, of course.
I'm going to pick three of them. I'm going to ask you this because, and you can't tell me your book. So what book changed the way you lead?
Maybe The Art of Possibility. I think it's by Ben Zander. He's the music director of the Boston Philharmonic. And one of the things that, you know, there's a lot of beautiful, it's one of those books that you just don't want it to end. But one of the things was you start off by with everybody, giving everybody an A+. So everybody starts with an A+ and communicating that with them, to them, so that you've got, you're starting with an A+ and you have the opportunity to sort of keep that. And I think and a whole bunch of other sort of elements from that book. But I love that book a lot.
What's the, and this doesn't just have to be personal. I'm curious, actually, because you have so much exposure to so many different CEOs. But what do you think is the hardest part of being a CEO?
Asking for help, being hard on yourself, just this dogged stubbornness to just, look, I mean, I think Elon Musk said, you know, being an entrepreneur, which is not, I mean, you could be a CEO and an entrepreneur, but like, it's like chewing glass and like looking into the abyss. And it really can feel that way. I mean, I've had many moments where that was truly my experience, and feeling alone in that process and just being so hard on yourself because you're trying to do the impossible and you won't take no for an answer. So those are some of the things that have been difficult for me.
No, I love it. I'm writing these down just so you know, just because I'm going to read The Art of Possibility. I have a book list and I love adding books to it. And then the last one, finish the sentence. Every company should blank.
Every company should create the time and the space for their colleagues to build stronger relationships, connections with one another, to learn with and about one another, and to feel like they're really growing and are in this sort of lifelong learning process together. I think every company should do that.
And I'm going to refer back to our conversation yesterday, but there was like, in my mind, and not that it was specifically forums at work, but we had always talked about like the forum mentality and how do I get our team, like, you know, and we do some things. Like, I think we do a pretty good job of creating some safe space for everyone to talk and like be vulnerable and... But the thing that like you really blew my mind with yesterday was when you were like, well, it could be cross-departmental and also cross, like, you know, I don't know what you call it, but like cross like hierarchy level, right? And I was like, wow, could you imagine if like, you know, whatever, that the head of accounting was talking to like a field person, right? And the amount of probably information that both of them possess that's important to one another and almost never gets communicated. And like, so I love that idea of like building the stronger relationships and creating the time and space for them to just talk to, like to be together, you know?
Actually, yeah. Just if I could say quickly two things
about
that.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So first, you're absolutely right. Each of them are like a gold mine of knowledge and data by virtue of what they're doing, and them feeling comfortable to open up, to share, to disclose these things, ask for each other's help, feel open and comfortable to do that is incredibly powerful. And so here's the second thing is a question. Would you ever hire or work with someone like a direct report that you didn't trust or like?
No, the trust part is so important. I agree with you. Yeah.
If you're going to hire an executive, someone's going to work on your leave, and you didn't trust them, you didn't feel comfortable you trust them. Yeah. Would you hire them?
No.
So what's interesting is you get to make that choice given where you sit in the organization, but nobody else does. So often someone else just sort of arrives and they're your colleague and now you got to work with this, but you don't get to choose. So, and now you, and maybe you have different interests, you have different, but so there's been no sort of mechanism to build deep trust with one another. And what I've learned is whoever you put in a forum, in a peer group, and you take them through the recipe of structured conversations, conversational turn-taking, walking them from the shallow end to the deep end of opening up. These forums, these peer groups are like relationship incubators or relationship accelerators. And so whoever you put in there, we always joke, they become a gang. I mean, they become so tight, you know, because you've created the environment, the conditions. So it should be any surprise that people often have conflicts because they didn't get to choose who they want to work with. They don't feel comfortable with them. And there's been no time, effort, or sort of process or verify to build that. So then they're just hoping they have a few things in common and they just somehow gel. And sometimes they do, but you know, that's sort of just to respond to what you're saying.
No, I love it, man. And this is like, this is the kind of stuff that just gets me so excited because it's all about like, you know, I always think about like best version of them, right? Like what is it, like to themselves? Like I want them to be the best version of themselves to themselves, right? And I think it's so cool.
What could be better? You know, what could be better than to work in an environment where everybody feels like they're day by day, they're growing. I mean, it's really, that's what evolution is. We're made to grow. It's why we climb mountains. It's why we lift weights. It's why we run marathons. We just want to get better. And if the workplace can be that venue and us as leaders can make that available for people the way we do it for ourselves as YPOers and leaders who pursue this, then how could you not be successful? How could you not be happy? And how could people not go home feeling more energized for their families?
Yeah, I love it. So on that note, I'm like, that's all the time we have today. We'll include links to the resources mentioned in today's show's notes. And thank you again, everyone, for listening, and keep an eye out for our next episode. And thank you again. That was awesome.
This was so much fun. I didn't see the time go by. Thank you.
This episode is brought to you by Infinite Consulting Corp, your go-to firm for MBE certified project and construction management consulting. Discover how Infinite can help you build a better future at infiniteconsultingcorp.com.